I'm sitting together with Dr. Ray Foley of Regional Gastroenterology Associates of Lancaster. Ray is the managing partner, the medical director of clinical research, and the division chief of gastroenterology at Lancaster General Hospital. Welcome to the microphone, Ray.
Good morning.
We're going to be talking about Lancaster County Project Access, a physician-led volunteer community effort that provides free health care to low-income, uninsured people who meet predetermined financial parameters. That's a mouthful, Ray, and we all know that the problem of the uninsured in America is a monstrous problem. There are close to 50 million people now without health insurance, and unfortunately, nobody seems to be doing very much about it. What is it that you're trying to do?
Well, Project Access of Lancaster County is a, as you said, a physician-led volunteer effort where we have encouraged physicians to participate. We are going to partner with other community representatives, and we hope to be able to deliver medical care, the full continuum of medical care, in a coordinated charity fashion to patients who don't have medical insurance.
Well, that all sounds very nice from the doctor's standpoint, but we all know that the big expenses in healthcare are hospitals, drugs. How can you as physicians affect that aspect of the problem?
Well, we need to partner with other members of the community. And in Lancaster, so far, we've been fortunate. The four hospitals that are in the county have all agreed to not only provide free inpatient and outpatient medical care, including laboratories, diagnostic studies, radiologic studies, but they've also agreed to fund the project. So we have to partner. We have four hospitals with whom we're partnering. We're also going to partner with pharmacies. There is an active pharmacist initiative led by Colleen Hayden in Lancaster, where the pharmacists are getting together. And there's been really some phenomenal success stories in the pharmacy world and other communities. In Kentucky, there was a community that budgeted $250,000 for their pharmacy budget, and they were able to get, in 1 year's time, between $10 and $11 million worth of free pharmaceuticals.
From the companies, from the manufacturing companies?
From the companies and from other programs, national programs.
So why do the hospitals come on board? Now, I can imagine there'd be a good reason, because if they can keep people out of their emergency rooms, which is so expensive, they probably figure it's a net wash for keeping them out of the ER and in your offices.
That's exactly right. You know, the New York Times had an article on the so-called smart hospitals, hospitals that are doing projects such as this, where they fund the medically uninsured in their community with the idea of giving them a medical home with getting medical care in a preventive, coordinated fashion, not only with a primary care physician, but with specialist physicians. And in the long run, it's cheaper for the community, it's cheaper for the hospitals, because you do keep them out of the emergency room. And as we all know, I think, you know, if you take care of a diabetic up front, it's much better than doing dialysis on a diabetic or doing open heart surgery on a diabetic down the line.
All right, so I can understand how you can get the hospitals on board and the pharmaceutical companies do it, because they've got so much profit anyway, as far as we care, that they can afford to give some free drugs away. But getting the doctors on board, there isn't that pure economic incentive that the hospitals have. The hospitals don't even have to be good-natured about it. For them, it's a business decision.
Correct.
As much as anything else, although I'm not going to suggest that they're not trying to do some good. But for doctors, it's a little different. Now, I know for personally, if you were to approach me, I think to myself all the time that all of us as people interested in going into the practice of medicine back when we were in college, I think we all, I don't know a single doctor who did not go into medicine because he or she didn't want to help people. But along the way, we get so distracted by just life itself and the realities of medical practice that we forget about why we went into medicine, and we get engaged in just the practice of medicine. So what is it that you do to get people back on track? I know you're back on track.
Well, when I was first invited to a meeting on this in June of 2006, and the reason I went to the meeting was primarily because it was billed as healthcare access for And Jan Bergen's name was on the invitation. I have a lot of personal and professional respect for Jan, so I went to this meeting. And you know, you go to a lot of meetings. You go to meetings with lawyers, and you go to meetings with insurance companies and Medicare representatives and hospital representatives, and you never leave those meetings feeling absolutely great. Well, I was at this meeting. It was 3 hours long. I left and I was driving home, and I said, you know, you feel like you're in your mid-20s again. This is why you went to medical school, just to take care of patients. We weren't talking about paperwork. In fact, it's nice. There is no paperwork involved with this for your office. You don't have to bargain for or negotiate for fees, because there are no fees. You're going to take care of these patients for free, and you're going to take care of these patients because you want to take care of patients. And the response we've had in the medical community has been almost overwhelming. The early on, as we approached physicians, almost to a person, it was they embraced the concept. And now, late January 2007, we have over 450 physicians who have signed up, and we started recruiting physicians in September of 2006. So over a four-month period, it's over 100 a month, but even within the last week, we've had another 10 physicians sign up.
Now, how do you go about contacting physicians and recruiting them for this?
Well, we've done it in different ways. I think initially there was a steering committee of Bill Fife, Brett Daniels, Larry Carroll, and myself. And we reached out and thought that probably the best thing to do was to contact members of the three largest medical groups in the county. So we discussed this with Jerry Gottlieb from the Lancaster General Medical Group, with Chip Mershon from the Physicians Alliance of Lancaster, and now Scott Silverstein from the Northern Lancaster County Medical Group. All three of those physicians are on the steering committee and represent with their groups over 100 physicians per group. So it was a nice way to get a lot of physicians on board. Those groups all bought into the concept easily.
Unanimously.
It was a no-brainer for them. And we have presented to the different medical staffs. We presented to the Lancaster General Hospital medical staff, and recently Brett Daniel just presented to the Lancaster Regional Medical Center staff. And we're going to present to the other two hospital staffs. And we've made a lot of phone calls. When you meet people socially, we talk to them about it. And it's an easy sell. People like to do it. I think people feel good about themselves when they sign up for it. And the doctors realize we all provide free care now. And we don't do it in a particularly coordinated fashion. And you don't get any recognition for what you do. If we do this in an organized, coordinated fashion, we think patients will get better care. We think they and the medical community will get recognition for the free care that they've been providing for years anyway. You know, physicians in Lancaster County have a tradition of providing free medical care.
Well, I'll just mention to the listening audience that we will have an article in the Journal of Lancaster General Hospital in the following issue about this program. But in this interview, we're discussing things that might not be in that article. The article will provide all the details about how things function. But I just want to go into one or two aspects of the functioning of the program so people understand what we're talking about. You alluded earlier to the fact that there's no paperwork. And that means that if you see a patient, since you do not expect to be paid and are not going to be sending a bill, you do have to keep medical records, of course, because you're caring for the patient. Is there some centralized bureau, so to speak, that first of all vets the patient, checks on their finances, and approves that they are appropriate and eligible for the program, and who then also coordinates care, follows up with them to be sure that they remain eligible for the program, et cetera? How is all of this coordinated?
Well, we are in the process of hiring a coordinator. Coordinator will be housed, it will be an office for project access at the Lancaster City and County Medical Society. They were generous and offered to provide space. In fact, project access in Lancaster County and the Lancaster City and County Medical Society together are going to form a foundation. We're in the process of forming a 501c3, a charitable foundation. And I'll just mention that Stevens and Lee, the law firm, has agreed to do this as a pro bono effort on their part. So we will set up this foundation. We will employ a coordinator and an administrative assistant. And then patients will be referred to the PALCO office.
PALCO, excuse me for interrupting, Project Access of Lancaster County, PALCO.
Right. They will be referred either by somebody, some member of the medical community will refer them to PALCO, and there they will bring their financial information. They will have to qualify. Initially, I think we're looking at 200% of the federal poverty level for a family of four, which means $40,000 a year or less. And these are people who cannot qualify for Medicaid and cannot qualify for any other type of medical insurance. So they then will be vetted, as you say, and they will be issued a card which says PALCO on it, and it'll just be like having a Blue Cross Blue Shield card or a health assurance card. And physicians who have agreed to see these patients, well, they will then call up, their insurance is PALCO. When I see them in the office, I probably will not even know what type of insurance they have. I will order their tests, and those tests will all be provided by the participating hospitals or laboratories or pharmacies, whatever is appropriate. And the central office will keep a record of these patients. Doctors are going to agree to see X number of patients a year. And we will make sure that the patients are seen and distributed in an equitable fashion. This is not insurance for life. These patients are going to be re-examined every 6 months. Our idea here is if folks are in a difficult time of their lives where they've lost their job or lost their insurance for some reason, that and then they have a medical catastrophe, it's almost unfair for them to then be hit with all these medical bills from which they then have to recover. So the idea is to get these people through a difficult time of their life so the remainder of their life is not hindered by these catastrophic medical bills.
Because the true enduring indigents have Medicaid and other mechanisms for
Correct.
Financing their health care. So you're trying to help, so to speak, the financially wounded, not the ones who are bedridden.
That's
financially.
Exactly right. And what's interesting is Dr. Suzanne Landis, who you might expect this when you think of her last name, is actually a Lancaster County native. She started Project Access in Asheville, North Carolina. After 2 years, over 50% of those patients that were in Project Access were employed and had health insurance. So it works in that regard.
Yeah, it's in a sense a rehabilitative project because it gets people back into the mainstream because they're not so saddled with debt from their health problems that they can never get back on top again.
That's exactly right.
Now, obviously it's going to take some funding to run the central office. Volunteerism and goodwill isn't enough, even for a charity. So how do you propose to fund this?
Well, we have a budget. The budget is a little over $600,000 a year for 3 years. Of that, we've budgeted $400,000 for pharmaceuticals, so we're hoping that we're going to be able to get a lot of that contributions. But funding is an issue. We have initial startup costs, and perhaps even a bigger challenge is the sustainability. Once we get up and running, how do you keep a project like this running? So we've approached a number of organizations, and we're asking them for funds, and we're asking them to commit for 3 years. All four hospitals have committed. Not everybody has given us a number yet, but all four hospitals have committed to some funds. Susan Eckert, the president of the United Way, has been very supportive of this, and United Way is on board. We've discussed this with a number of the community foundations. In fact, earlier this week, I presented to what's called the Funders Forum, which is a gathering of the foundations from Lancaster County that meets, I believe, on a quarterly basis, and we presented the Project Access concept to them. I believe it was well received, and we're hoping that well reception is going to generate some funds.
It must be helpful to you, though, in approaching people that this is, in fact, a national movement. There's precedent of successful programs like this in other communities so that you can show people that although we may not have a track record here, the concept is viable.
Yes, I mean, that's very helpful. In fact, when we go through our presentation, you give examples of communities where this has been very, very successful.
Give us a perspective of that. How many programs are there in the country, and do you know a number of how many people are being served?
There's a national organization called American Project Access Network, and their website, for those that are interested, is www.apanonline.org, APAN, American Project Access Network. And there are over 30 communities that are up and running and officially aligned with the American Project Access Network. There are other communities that are doing a similar thing along the same ideas but don't have an official alignment with them. But of those companies, there have been really remarkable success stories. Spokane, Washington, they have contributed between $4 and $5 million in medical care in a 2-year period. They were so successful in Spokane that they there are 5 other counties in the state of Washington that are have adopted this. In Dallas, Texas, in conjunction with Baylor, the hospitals and physicians there have contributed over $8 million on an annual basis. One of the striking examples of success was in Indianapolis, where over a 2-year period, before being enrolled in Project Access, 64% of the uninsured visited an emergency room for non-urgent care. After being enrolled in Project Access, in a 1-year period, only 1% of those patients presented to an emergency room. So it's really sort of, it's really very, very striking.
That's a slide you must show very often.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. And the other great thing is, in over a 2-year period in Asheville, North Carolina, Dr. Landis's initial project, when they looked at self-reported health, 87% of people enrolled in a Project Access reported good or excellent health compared to 84% of the insured people. So it's really been a resounding success in the communities where it's up and running.
Now, your implication just in that remark that it's comparable to having health insurance leads me to circle back to something you said earlier that I think has very interesting implications, even if you didn't realize it at the time. You said that when you saw a patient from Palco, you very likely wouldn't know even that they were from Palco because that would all be handled out front, so to speak. I would like to ask you to comment a little bit about the issue of excessive or unnecessary health care. All of us order tests that we probably could do without. Now and then, I don't mean it's an everyday occurrence, but now and then we order tests. We know it's part of the health care debate. Do doctors order too many tests because they're worried about malpractice? First of all, I will ask you to discuss the whole issue of malpractice exposure and so on and what the experience has been nationally, because I would expect you to tell me that malpractice is lawsuits are extraordinarily rare.
There has yet to be a lawsuit generated by a Project Access patient against a physician.
Okay, that does not surprise me. Right. And anyway, doctors who have malpractice insurance, it doesn't matter what the source of the patient is, so they're still protected either way. But I'm much more interested in the question of the unnecessary test. If you were about to order an MRI, just as we sometimes do to find out if you're really on target or not, how do you think that would influence decision making? And maybe we ought to know they're on Palco.
A difficult question.
It was meant to be.
Yeah. I mean, you would hope that we're going to treat these patients like any other patient. So I guess I would hope that your train of thought would be, this is what I would do for anybody with insurance, so this is what I would do for somebody that doesn't have insurance. There are there are financial realities, and sometimes when, particularly in this day and age, when people have increasing deductibles, I think they become more involved in the decisions of what tests they get, which is not necessarily a bad thing, because I do think a lot of times we order tests that we order to cover our rear ends because we don't think much is going on, but heaven forbid something is going on, so let's order this test just to make sure everything's okay. But if the patients have a bigger financial interest in that, then perhaps you don't have to get that test. I'm not sure how this is going to go in Project Access because I haven't dealt with any of those patients, but I would hope that we could do it in a reasonable, cost-effective fashion. I think we do have to be aware of how expensive some of those tests are, and we don't want to squander funds, as it were. In fact, there's another interesting local connection with the Project Access folk, and Jack Ichter is a family physician in Manor Family Health, and his brother, Joe, runs Project Access in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And he reported us that there was at least one, I think in Albuquerque, and I think in another, it may have been Wichita, Kansas, where they've decided not to cover chemotherapy because they couldn't afford to do it. They figured if the chemotherapy was so expensive that if they did that, it shot their pharmaceutical budget. So you may have to make some tough financial and medical decisions that way.
Well, I'm going to suggest that the need to at least give some thought to these matters, in the end, will benefit the nature of medical practice in every office that's participating in PALCO. Because I don't think there's anything bad about just stopping for a moment and taking a deep breath when you're contemplating some mega expensive test and just saying, is this really something I need to do if it's going to erode the amount of money that would be available to take care of somebody else? And in a sense, that is the kind of discussion that's going to have to go on in this country in the global picture of healthcare. We are not going to be continuously able to expand the pool of money that's available.
Right. We cannot continue to do what we've done.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that the PALCO considerations are considerations that I think will apply much more widely, and this would be a good influence. Now, when are you going to get underway with this?
We hope we are in the interviewing stage for our coordinator, and we hope to have a coordinator hired within the next 4 weeks or so. And we would hope to enroll our first patients within the next 2 to 3 months. And we will start small. You know, one of the questions we have from physicians when we talk to them is there is a fear that people will be overwhelmed by these uninsured patients. Well, we're going to have one person enrolling these patients. So we probably start with between 10 and 20 patients, get them enrolled, make sure everything works flawlessly, and then we'll expand it from there. We've had commitments from doctors in every subspecialty. So I don't think any one doctor or any one practice should fear being overwhelmed with these patients. So we'll start small, divide the patients equitably, and hopefully by the spring of 2007 we'll be up and running.
Okay, well, we're doing this interview here at the end of January. And the issue that will contain this interview will appear in March. So you may very well be either up and running already or
very close to it.
Right, yeah. Just on the brink of it. Well, as a last comment, if a doctor heeds the call and has the thought that we talked about at the beginning of the interview about really wanting to devote some time to helping people, and just helping people, whom do they contact? How do they?
Well, eventually they'll be able to contact our coordinator, but right now they should contact one of the members of the steering committee, which would be me, or the other members of the steering committee are Chris Hager. I don't think we mentioned Chris before. He's a young physician who's just starting a practice in the Effort area, but he's representing Lancaster County Medical Society. Larry Carroll, Bill Fife, Brett Daniels, Jerry Gottlieb, Chip Mershon, or Scott Silverstein, and well, Colleen Hayden, the pharmacist.
Well, every one of those names, to my mind's eye, has a gold star next to them. So I want to thank you for bringing these wonderful ideas to our microphone. Thank you for what you're doing and what you're going to be doing. And we'll be hearing a lot more about it, and we're going to look forward to your article in print that will really flesh things out in the June issue.
Thank you. Thank you very much.